Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd in my home office. With art and movie theaters closed, music venues silent, and sports arenas shut down, we're having to find new entertainment options. Are you watching endless YouTube videos, building something, cooking, playing games, or watching movies or TV series? Tell us how you're keeping yourself and your family entertained and describe how it's changed since social distancing has been put in place. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. A little later in the program, we'll talk about games we're playing. But first, we welcome back Tim Miller, film critic and features editor at the Cape Cod Times. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Mindy. How are you?
I'm good. We're here, kind of hunkering down, just as we hope everybody else is. Tim, how has production been impacted, with all this? We hear about some films pushing back release dates and, a lot of paid TV is, offering some things for free. What's happening with the production?
Well, I mean, obviously there are a lot of delays. Right now, obviously we're feeling the impact because, a lot of movies are being held back, and for good reason. And hey, we can't go to theaters anyway. Mm-hmm. Some are, being released directly to streaming services, but for the most part, we're feeling it now. The impact, and the thing is, once we're allowed back in theaters, I think a lot of the movies that are that have been held back, all of a sudden we'll have those. So I don't honestly know how much in the future will be impacted. There probably won't be quite as many as once we resume hopefully normal activities. One thing I think is this year's Oscars might be kind of interesting. Or the Oscars
right.
for this year, because there'll probably be quite a few more limited choice. There'll be more limited choices, but so much of it depends on how long this goes on.
So this actually then is a really good opportunity to watch some of the classic films that
Absolutely.
We haven't gotten around to it, or revisiting them. Do
yeah.
you have a top 10 or a classic film list that you a must see?
Well, yeah, I kind of broke it down a little bit. Yeah, I've got I'm a huge Bogart fan, and so my three favorite Bogart movies are Casablanca, The Big Sleep, and The Maltese Falcon. The last two are both detective films. And, if people have time and they're mm-hmm. I would definitely check those out. David Lean's Lawrence of Arabia and A Passage to India are two of my favorite movies. Those are certainly movies that should be seen on the big screen, or the bigger the better. So, but with TVs being, bigger now,
as much
as you used to. I would definitely, and those are longer movies, so being at home sometimes makes the longer movies better.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have seen maybe Psycho or The Birds, but, they maybe haven't... they've heard of a lot of Alfred Hitchcock's movies, but maybe they haven't actually, sort of done the deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
You could almost do a whole Hitchcock festival, your own Hitchcock festival. I once taught a class just on Hitchcock movies, and he's just such a great filmmaker, and it really is. A lesson on filmmaking, just watch his movies. My favorite and the one that's sort of regarded as his masterpiece is Vertigo,
mm-hmm.
Which actually I just showed, remotely to a film class that I'm still teaching. But Vertigo is he's known as the master of suspense, but Vertigo goes so much deeper about, you know, in dealing with things like, you know, do we love the person for who that person is, or is it a sort of do we love the image that exists in our mind? you know, it's a great film, but also some of his older movies are so good. The 39 Steps is one of my favorites from the mid-30s, and Shadow of a Doubt with Teresa Wright and Joseph Cotten from the early 40s is a really, you know, it's sort of a family film where Uncle Charlie comes to visit, and is Uncle Charlie actually a serial killer?
Oh, dear. That's one I've not, I just wrote it down. That's one I have not seen. I thought I had seen most of it.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's not one that's talked about a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, hardcore Hitchcock fans, I think, would put it among his very best. But it certainly is one, you know, it doesn't get the attention that, you know, Notorious or Rebecca or so many movies of Hitchcock get. So that's a nice sleeper.
I made a list of three. I was just trying to think of like what my favorites are. And since we're talking 1940s right now, Laura, Otto Preminger's Laura.
Oh, yeah.
That was I love Vincent Price anyway. But Gene Tierney, Vincent Price, Dana Andrews. It's a mystery.
Yeah.
But one of my favorites.
Story. It's great. That's a great film. A great example of film noir, which had its heyday in the 40s and early 50s. And, I love that suggestion. Gene Tierney was so beautiful, too.
There's the All About Eve.
I thought of that one, too. I mean, it's very, you know, multiple Oscar winner. Anybody who loves theater, that's a must-see. They probably already have seen it. But
I've seen
that movie so many times, and because the dialogue is so so clever, and there's just so much in there. It's one of those movies you can see over and over again.
There's another one if you just kind of want to chuckle. The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, which isn't meant to be funny, but the dialogue is so dated that you can't help but laugh through some of that.
I mean, that's the thing. A lot of times with my film students, I'll tell them, I'll go, look, you know, you always have to consider the context of, you know, the times. I mean, even, you know, sometimes it's you know, it's not such pleasant things. Like even, you know, certainly a lot of people look at Gone with the Wind now and think, boy, pretty racist movie. But even something like Casablanca, which is one of my, you know, very close to the top of my list. And, you know, I mean, there's a minute when Ingrid Bergman refers to Sam is who's the boy at the piano, you know, and the guy's in his 40s, you know, so you definitely sometimes, you know, you have to understand how dated things are. But like you said, sometimes movies with The Ghost of Mrs. Muir, you know, there's a certain charm in seeing a dated movie.
Another one I want to mention, another one of my favorites, Singing in the Rain. Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
I think any Gene Kelly movie is worth watching, but Singing in the Rain is probably my favorite of his. I think he, in a lot of ways, was underrated. You know, when you think of, oh my gosh, who's the other dancer? Yes, thank you. We think of Fred Astaire as the greatest sort of male dancer, but Gene Kelly was far more athletic and just an amazing dancer, and his choreography, just phenomenal.
Yeah. I definitely prefer Astaire to Kelly. But they're definitely, you know, but you absolutely hit it on the head as far as, I mean, the difference is, I think Astaire was more, you know, he was more elegant, more graceful, whereas Kelly was more, I mean, and certainly what Astaire did was athletic. It just was.
Oh, yeah.
But Kelly seemed to have a more vigorous, almost virile physical style. You know, he did seem more athletic. My favorite, and I think more people probably would agree with you, Mindy, that, you know, people love Singing in the Rain. My favorite of his is An American in Paris.
Oh, that's a good one, too. Yeah.
And a lot of it, though, has to do with I just love Gershwin so much. The Gershwin music is so good. And there's a mini ballet almost at the end. And there's a moment where Kelly and Leslie Caron are climax of the scene in a way where, and it's like, oh my God, I think it's in or near a fountain, but it's like, wow, what an expression of beautiful, beautiful expression of love and passion expressed through dance and
through music. Yeah.
I'm very moved by that movie at the end, by that.
Yeah, and then, of course, Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's got to be on the list.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's another one that really, it's aged so well, I think. I mean, so funny. Bert Lahr is the Cowardly Lion, and the clever songs, and it's so good.
Yeah.
Of course, we have the Cape connection with Margaret Hamilton. The Wicked Witch lived here,
Debut here too?
Yeah, Cape Cinema.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Premiere. Yeah.
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 That's so amazing.
Yeah,
a little bit of trivia.
Great one. And I think a lot of times, you know, people are so. I'm glad you asked about classic films because people are so obsessed with the new.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have, 20 movies out, and maybe two or three are first rate if you're lucky, and a lot of them are just sort of disposable. And there are so many classic movies out there that people have heard of, but because they're quote-unquote old, somehow people ignore them. You know, for some reason, people ignore them. This is a great time for that deep dive.
All right. And what about family movies? They're classics like, Wizard of Oz, but Wizard of Oz might be a little too scary for really young kids. I know. I can't wait for my grandson to see it, but right now I think it would just freak him out. So I've been watching a lot of younger, he's almost five, so I've been watching a lot of the younger set sort of stuff. And I would say there's a few that I think are really cute and that are not horrible to sit through as an adult, and that's the Pets and Pets 2 movie. I don't know if you've seen those. They're animated movies. And they're what happens when, people aren't around, what your pets are up to. And,
right.
And there's some adult humor in there that will make you laugh.
Yeah.
And we also saw one just recently called A Turtle's Tale, Sammy's Adventures, which is another good one for the kids. Of course, we've also seen Spy Kids 1, 2, 3, and 4. but there's actually quite a few choices for family movies.
You know, you're probably better than I am about that because I don't know how.
Your kids are big.
Well, yeah, but I do have a 2-year-old granddaughter now, and I'm really excited about the prospect of taking her to movies when she's a little bit older. But I'm really kind of, first of all, I grew up, my parents would take me to sort of adult movies. I don't mean porno.
Right.
Lawrence of Arabia I saw when I was 7, and The Great Escape and The Birds. Maybe this might explain a lot about me, but my daughter claims, and I don't think this is true, though, that I showed her Freaks when she was a child.
Oh, my goodness.
I think she was a teenager. But I did show her and my son, this, when she was, I think, 10 and he was 7, I showed them The Seven Samurai, a Japan, you know, 3.5 hour black and white Japanese film by Akira Kurosawa, because I wanted them to grow up not being afraid of subtitles, and this was a very accessible movie in addition to being a great movie. I think that there, you know, certainly there should be, you know, there are Disney movies like Beauty and the Beast and that, you know, are great selections. Although even there's death in that too. It depends on the kid. Some of my more maybe unusual suggestions for family films, Help, to introduce your kids or grandkids to the Beatles.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's
a really fun movie
and great music, and you know, my kids grew up as Beatles fans, and my much younger brother, I remember spending a New Year's Eve watching Help with him and, you know, sort of introducing him to the Beatles, and I'm glad I did. When I was a little kid, I loved the classic horror movies, and I know my daughter did too. Like, again, it depends on the kid whether they get too scared or not, but Frankenstein, Dracula, The Invisible Man, The Wolf Man. Mm-hmm. I loved those movies when I was a kid.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah, more. I would say like maybe 11, 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that,
Yeah. Again, another oldie, but it's A Mad, 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 Mad World, I thought was a funny movie for a kid. You know, I remember seeing that when I was 8 and loving that. somewhat more recent, I mean, although it's still, you know, what's recent to me, it's like I'll tell my students and then I'll realize, wait a minute, this was made, you know, 15 years before they were born. But Back to the Future is a
that's a great series. Yeah. I love anything with Michael J. Fox. I liked him. You're listening to The Point, and we're talking about the ways we're keeping ourselves entertained while theaters, art venues, and sports are all suspended, and we're social distancing. What are you watching, playing, or doing either alone or with others, and how has it changed since the pandemic? Give us a call, 866-999-4626, or shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Tim Miller, film critic and features editor at the Cape Cod Times, and joining us now is Carl Herzog. He's day job. He is the public historian at the USS Constitution Museum in Boston. In his spare time, he collects and plays all manner of board games, other kinds of tabletop games, and computer games. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you.
Now, you play a lot of games. Has social distancing changed what you're playing and whom you're playing with?
Yeah, absolutely. Normally, the types of games we play are, you know, larger multiplayer games, and that means getting people together in a group. But here we're just at home, so it's my wife and I doing some two-player games and doing a lot more gaming online, playing what would normally be tabletop board games, but playing over the internet.
So what are some of your favorite board games to play at home?
Well, I've got a lot of favorite board games. As a historian, I started out very early on. I was attracted to this as a hobby about 40 years ago. And I play a lot of historical games that are reenacting battles and elements of history. But some of the more fun ones that you can play, that we play at home, include things like Carcassonne, which is a real simple tile-laying game in which you are putting out simple tiles on the table that represent pieces of a map, and you're trying to assemble walled cities and farms and connected roads and build out that map for points.
What are some of the games that promote and teach cooperation and teamwork? And do you think the skills in these games can translate into real world skills?
Oh my gosh. This is one of the great aspects of what has been a renaissance in board gaming over the last 20 years or so. You know, we tend to, depending on what age you are, we tend to think of board games as being those long, strung out sessions of Monopoly or Sorry or Clue or those sort of few basics from the mid-1900s. But newer games are focused on cooperation. You know, one of the biggest and most relevant and most popular cooperative games in general that's particularly relevant right now is actually called Pandemic. And it is a game in which the players are all taking roles of first responders in dealing with a global pandemic. It was designed after 2004 during the SARS epidemic by a designer named Matt Leacock. And it is obviously seeing a resurgence today. But as Matt the designer wrote in the New York Times last week, he said one of the elements that this teaches is that game teaches is that no one player can win that game and no one person can solve this current crisis. We have to work together to do it.
Oh, I have a great suggestion for the little guys along those same lines. This is for for 2 to 4 players age 3 and up, and it's called I Found It, Busy Town's I Found It. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not, Carl, but so the kids, it's a cooperative game. It's a race across Busy Town, and they're looking for specific objects on this map. The board is like 6 feet long, and if you were trying to help Goldbug get these objects and get to the ferry so you can have your picnic on Pig Island before the pigs eat all the food. So again, you either win together or you lose together, and it's a really fun little game for the younger set.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of them out there like that are really awesome. One of my favorites that is really quick and really manic, it is literally a 5-minute long game, is called Space Team, and all of the players represent the crew of this spaceship that has suffered a catastrophic failure. And so you're all trying to solve your own set of problems in your corner of the spaceship, but you all have to do it with one shared set of tools. And these fictional science fiction tools don't have names. They just have cards that show pictures of them. So you're all trying to get someone else to give you the tool you need, but you're calling out to them, describing it, while at the same time trying to listen to what everyone else needs that you might have. And share it all in a way that you solve the problems before the 5-minute sand glass runs out.
I love it. Is that a board game or is that an online game?
No, this is board game. It's a card game. It's pretty readily available. And it does actually do an amazing job of teaching. Some of the nautical science faculty at the Sea Education Association right here in Woods Hole have used it in the past in crew training and with students. And looking at issues of cooperation and teamwork. There's a lot of them out there. Yeah, the other type of game that's really amazing at this are the traditional role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons, which, you know, had a heyday in the 80s, but in the last few years have made a huge comeback, in part because people are looking actually to disconnect from that video and be back with each other around a tabletop. And those games are phenomenal at teaching teamwork, cooperation, and even social skills. And more of those kinds of games are being used by teachers. That's the kind of game that, while it seems daunting at first, there are fairly easy to get into introductory box sets that you can, order and buy online.
Yeah. Now, in a sense, many games are educational, and they might be teaching social skills, or they can help us with math, reasoning, or logic. And of course, many parents are struggling to keep their children engaged and learning at home. It can be a lot more fun if you're learning this with a game. So what are maybe some games you suggest for different subjects, like math, geography, science down the line?
Yeah, there's a lot of games that are doing really great at focusing in on this. I was talking with my friend Matt Donnelly, who, runs an organization called Wicked Fun Games here on the Cape, and he organizes family game days at public libraries all around the Cape and Massachusetts that are designed to introduce parents to exactly these kinds of games. He also runs escape rooms and does a monthly session. This isn't a business. It's literally just an organization to promote games like this. And we were talking about this just yesterday that, there are a lot of great ones out there. Math is pretty simple because nearly all games, board games in particular, have a mathematical or arithmetic component because that's the way they're using to score things. Geography, social studies are also a lot of really great choices that run across age groups. One of the ones that's really fantastic is a series of games called 10 Days in Europe, 10 Days in Africa, 10 Days in the U.S., 10 Days in Asia. And as a geography game, the board is literally just a map of this place. And then you are assembling a hand of 10 cards, each one representing a location on that map. And you have to be able to connect them physically together in a way that you could on a 10-day trip transit from step to step to step across the map. Ticket to Ride is another one like that. It's a railroad building game where you are building rail lines across either the U.S. or there's a European edition. Lots of games like that. Tons of history games, obviously. And for, you know, across older groups of both kids and well as adults, games like Seven Wonders is a card game in which players are building sort of civilizations and figuring out what kind of resources they need to build up and meet one of the great seven wonders of the ancient world. And even there, there's older, for older kids, there's some really amazing games that look at history and social studies. Twilight Struggle is a game about the Cold War. And it's a little bit like Risk, if you remember that, an old game that was sort of about world, you know, taking over the world. But in this one, the players are playing the two superpowers that vied against each other during the Cold War and trying to influence these other countries to be, you know, join their side, either through coup or political influence. And it's incredibly evocative of the history of that time period. In terms of the cards and events that show up on randomly drawn cards. And you can even contribute to winning by investing in things like the space race or nuclear energy. So, there's a lot of that in geography.
Yeah. We have an email from Alyssa. We are playing Scattergories, a word game with my mother in Virginia on Skype. It works well, and since she lives alone, it's a great way for her to connect with others. There are various lists of people, places, things. A random letter is chosen, and players have to think of items from the list that start with that letter. The trick is you don't get points if someone else gives the same answer, so you have to stretch your brain. That sounds like
right.
A good one, too. Yeah.
Right.
Now, if people want to get their teens offline, there's a lot of online game playing that happens, especially with teenagers. But if you want to get your kids offline, say in that 12 to 18 year old range, what might be some board games that they would be interested in?
Well, you know, I think because we're all kind of cooped up together as a family, getting together, a lot of these kinds of cooperative games are really great for that. Some of the ones I already mentioned, and some of the ones that do other things, you know, multiplayer games like the Seven Wonders ones I mentioned. Adventure games where you are sort of pursuing a little bit more in-depth kinds of goals that advance along as you go. And some of the things that, you know, require you to dig in and think in a little bit more complex ways. There's a great sort of logic game called Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective, where you are literally Sherlock Holmes and you're trying to solve mysteries across old London. And bit by bit, the clues are revealed and everyone can sort of kick in their ideas on what works. There's a great sort of group game called Codenames, where it's a sort of similar to the kind of one of some of the other word games. This one is designs you to associate, lays out a set of cards with words on them, and then you have to announce one word that you associate with a certain cards on the table, the most number of certain cards on the table. And that's a team kind of game. And so those kinds of team-oriented games are also great if you've got teenagers at home who are either vying against each other or joining up with parents to play.
Yeah. Can you recommend resources that can help us find games that target specific skills or age levels?
Yeah, sure. There are actually a number of different awards that are given out for board games like this, including Mensa. Mensa, the Mensa Select awards that they designed for like top-end games. And then because many of these are designed by Germans, some of them are given awards through a German sort of jury of critics called the Spiel des Jahres. And then the Golden Geek Awards are issued by an amazing website that's probably the best resource for all of this. It's called BoardGameGeek.com. Mm-hmm. And on BoardGameGeek, you'll actually find tens of thousands of games, board games, listed and reviewed, and with lists of recommendations for categories, age groups, complexity, and it includes previous connections to previous lists of award winners for all those different kinds of gaming awards.
The pandemic has introduced many people to Zoom, and for those who don't know what that is, it's a video conference platform that many are using for work and to engage with friends and family. Are there games that are fairly easy to play in a video conference session?
Well, there are some that you can do through Zoom and you know, other sort of video conferencing like Google Hangouts and Skype. But if you're playing a board game where it's one set of board and pieces that has a shared environment, some of that can get a little bit cumbersome and bulky. Some of the better ways to do that are either through websites that are designed around actually presenting a board game on your screen that you can then connect with someone else over. One of the great ones for that is called Tabletop Simulator, and it's actually just a program that simulates a board game tabletop, and then different publishers have created sort of virtual versions of their board games that can be played. It's super intuitive because you are literally just using your mouse to move the pieces around a representation of the board. Tabletopia is another one that has specific games available through it. Board Game Arena is another one. And then if there's specific games you want to play, increasingly a lot of game publishers are making their games available in specialized apps available for Android or Apple. Or if you're on a personal computer, there is a service called Steam, steampowered.com, that is normally used for selling more traditional type of video games. But video versions of lots of these kinds of board games are available on there. And you can play either against the computer or against other players.
Now, let's say you don't have a whole ton of games stashed in your closet and you don't want to spend more time in front of a screen. What are some games you can play with items that you might already have?
Well, you know, everyone probably has a set of cards, playing cards, lying around, as well as some more traditional games. And a lot of those games still have value and are, you know, really great. Card games in particular are really great at teaching some of the mathematics skills you were talking about. My wife is a huge cribbage player, and she loves the sort of mathematical puzzle of figuring out how to maximize those points.
I like cribbage too. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't have to be held to the rules, any set of rules. For a lot of those more traditional games, if you go online, you can find variant rules and other ways. You know, the rules of a game are only what all the players agree to. So feel free to make up your own games with the things that you have around the house, or look for variants. You know, we had some friends who were playing the card game Whist, and I wasn't familiar with it, and I looked it up online, and my gosh, there's like dozens of different varieties of it.
Yes. I love that game. But yeah, you're right. Depending on who you're playing with, you might have a different set of rules. Now, with all this game playing that you do, do you have any time for watching TV and movies?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hang on with us, Carl, because we're gonna talk about TV shows and series after a quick break. And you're listening to The Point. We are talking about the ways we are keeping ourselves entertained while we're social distancing. What are you watching, playing, or doing? 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. With us is Tim Miller, film critic and features editor at the Cape Cod Times, and Carl Herzog, who is the public historian at the USS Constitution Museum in Boston. And in his spare time, he collects and plays all manner of board games, other kinds of tabletop games, and computer games. And again, our number 866-999-4626 or thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, Tim, there are so many series available. I'm trying to think of what maybe some of the favorite series from the past television series that might be worth revisiting. And some, I know there's many of our listeners who don't even own television sets, but you can still get some of these TV series on your, you know, laptop or iPads, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm right now I'm binge-watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, the Larry David comedy, which is, it's so twisted, but it makes me laugh out loud at least once an episode, often a lot of times during an episode. It's really good.
We could use some laughing,
Oh, no kidding, you know, I think, you know, Boardwalk Empire, The Sopranos, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, like you said, they're sort of the usual suspects, and it is a good time, though, to go back, I think, and, you know, binge watch those. Downton Abbey, I think, would be
I was saying most people have heard of Downton Abbey by now, but if you haven't had a chance, that would be a great series to binge watch.
Gosh, I love that. That's good. A couple, maybe a little bit lesser known, two of them that, not, you know, it didn't start during this pandemic, but Peaky Blinders and Broadchurch are two that I caught on Netflix that I really liked a lot.
I never heard of that. Broadchurch, and what was the other one?
Peaky Blinders. They're both British. Peaky Blinders, I'll warn people, is pretty violent. You know, it's a...
Oh. Came crossing that off my list.
A gang in the, you know, in the, in Manchester. I'm trying to remember what year. It's been a while now since I've seen it. I think it's like, you know, Prohibition era or that. But it's really good. Succession, a more recent show that's actually still on HBO, is a really, you know, people have probably heard of it because it's been winning a lot of awards. It's about a family, a palacing intrigue among a family in the corporate world. Fleabag is, you know, it's a little off color, but hilarious, and that certainly has gotten a lot of awards lately and a lot of attention.
And Amazing Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah, you know, this is the thing. There are so many things on TV right now, so many of those types of shows, and that's one that everybody tells me, oh, you're going to love that, you're going to love that, and I just haven't gotten around to it yet. But that sounds like
yes.
a great suggestion.
Tim, I'm telling you, once you start watching that, you are not going to want to stop. It was a great series. Carl, what are you watching?
Well, Mrs. Maisel, we would be watching, but we've already watched through the entire thing.
Right, I know, and sure. Now we're like, when are we going to get the next season, right?
Exactly, yeah. You know, you were right about not having a television, though, and, you know, we're mostly watch everything on sort of Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu, and we're catching up with a lot of those things. We just got sucked into Ozark with Jason Bateman as a story of a... an accountant for the mob who ends up going to the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri to try and launder money for drug dealers. kind of like Breaking Bad in the Ozarks, which is that's been for three seasons now. There's a number of other older, you know, shows that are coming up again for free on these streaming services because of the current situation. I'm a bit of a science fiction geek, and one of my favorite shows of all time, the Battlestar Galactica television show from the early 2000s, is available for free on streaming now, too. And that was a phenomenal television show that saw a lot of fandom from popular awards from people who had no previous interest in science fiction because it was very much sort of a parable for the politics of what was going on at the time.
Mm. Yeah, and another great series, The Crown. You know what I really like? And Tim, have you seen The Crown?
I've seen, I think, the first season. I really liked it, but it's one of those things where I kind of
don't have time. What's really interesting, I think, about that is the first, I think, two seasons they had the same set of actors, and then for season three, as Queen Elizabeth ages, they've changed the actress who plays her and the actor who plays Prince Philip, and it's a really interesting idea, and there are things I like about it and things I don't like about that. I really loved Claire Foy as Queen Elizabeth, so I'm having a harder time warming up to the new Queen Elizabeth, but it's a great series. And some of the older things,
supposed to be really great in that too.
Oh, she is. Yes, she is. But yeah, that's one you should put on your list, Tim. The other thing that I never get tired of are the old Agatha Christies, you know, Hercule Poirot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with that either. We have an email from a listener who has some thoughts on gaming with something you have at home. They write Pictionary or Dictionary. One player picks a word from the dictionary that no one knows the definition of. Each player composes a definition of the word, and those definitions are put in a hat along with the real definition. Players vote on which definition they think is correct. Whoever has their definition selected gets a point. Great way to have fun and increase vocabulary. That's a great suggestion.
Another game called Wits and Wagers like that. That's phenomenal, where it's a trivia game, but you don't have to have the right answer to win. If you have the wrong answer, you're just betting on who you think had the right answer.
Yeah. Tim, you know, when we're looking at these TV series, and we were talking about movies earlier, there are, you know, people who want to kind of get away from reality right now and want something that's entertaining them, and others who maybe want to watch those movies like Contagion and Pandemic. I would think this would be a horrible time to be watching something like that, but... But some people do.
I was thinking of you know, movies like that. I'm with you. I mean, I'm in no hurry to watch that. But what I think would be a good thing to do is to watch movies about people who rise to the occasion, like Henry V. For example, you know, if somebody doesn't mind watching Shakespeare, Kenneth Branagh's Henry V is one of my all-time favorite movies. And, you know, it's about, like, you know, and this obviously is easier said than done, and I'm not saying that I'm doing a good job of this, but it's kind of like this is a really good time to be the person you want to be, like how you react to this situation. And, you know, so it's kind of like, well, okay, how do I deal with this? And I think, if you don't mind the term, I think it's a good movie to see movies about badasses. You know, people who, you know, I mean, like seeing, you know, something where people figure out how to survive, but it's not just, you know, where they're inordinately gifted or, you know, or brave, but like the every man and every woman who is able to tackle a bad situation and kind of do the right thing and, you know.
You're making me think of another suggestion for the younger set, one I didn't mention earlier, Moana.
That
is a great movie, and it's really fun. I love that you know, Dwayne Johnson plays Maui, the demigod, and it's hilarious. And it's a female heroine who saves the day, and it's a great movie.
I think that's something like that is a great suggestion. You know, where you know, I'm sure, like in terms of, you know, family films, and I mean, kids. You know, even if you're trying to shelter them, I think that I'm sure that they're kind of catching on to the tension around them and fear. And something, that's a great idea too, because it's not like so serious. It sort of takes a humorous approach, but still gets that point across that, you know.
Yeah. So there are many options to stream content, and so for people who don't have movie or TV subscription services, we should mention that many Cape and Islands public libraries offer free streaming of movies, audiobooks, music, and television programs. You just need to visit your local library website. But for folks who are interested in subscribing to streaming services, do you have recommendations on what service to use for your interests? I mean, Carl, you mentioned you use Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon Prime, which is exactly the same things that we use.
Yeah. For me, it's my favorite is the Criterion Collection. And that, I think for a broader people with a broader interest, I think probably Netflix would be the way to go. There's so many excellent things on it. Criterion has a lot of old foreign films, a lot of classics, a lot of films that I've heard of and haven't had a chance to see. You know, it's a really great place to go exploring, and it's not that expensive. So that would be the one. That's my favorite. I also, I've also been spending a lot of time watching Turner Classic Movies and sort of going on demand and going through their, what they have available at any given time. You mentioned how you love Vincent Price.
Yes.
Mindy, I just watched, in some ways it's a terrible movie, but it's still fun. A Comedy of Terrors. It's a 1963 movie with Vincent Price as a horror comedy with Vincent Price plays an undertaker whose business isn't doing so well, so he decides that he's got to kind of give a boost to his business, so he murders people. And Peter Lorre is his henchman, and Basil Rathbone is this Macbeth-spouting potential victim.
I think I've seen that, yeah.
Boris Karloff plays this sort of decrepit father-in-law, and
it's quite a cast.
Oh, I know. It's one of those. It's from Roger Corman's sort of his company in the '60s, where he like remade a lot of Edgar Allan Poe movies. They're kind of these low budget sort of schlocky movies, but they're fun.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that on Turner Classic Movies the other night.
Yeah. Mindy, you mentioned Moana, and it's worth noting that Disney has now got its own streaming channel, Disney Plus, and they're packaging up with Hulu for relatively cheap. I think you can get a Hulu, ESPN, and Disney Plus together. And the Disney Plus channel has this huge back library of all those, absurd sort of 1960s Disney movies, Herbie the Love Bug, as well as the original vintage Mickey Mouse cartoons, and a lot of the newer ones like Moana, Mulan.
Aladdin. Good to know. Yeah. I want to squeeze this in. Meredith writes, I heartily suggest the TV series The English Game on Netflix. Julian Fellowes of Downton Abbey fame is one of the creators. Great show for those interested in history, sports, and communities. It looks at the transformation of British football from a game of the elite to a game for the working class. And we are going to have to leave it there. Thanks to Miller, film critic, features editor at the Cape Cod Times, and Carl Herzog, public historian at the USS Constitution Museum in Boston and collector of all kinds of games. Thank you both for all of your suggestions this morning. Really appreciate that. Wow. Happy gaming and watching.
Thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.